I walk a lonely road, the only one that I have ever known. Don't know where it goes, but it's home to me, and I walk alone. I walk this empty street.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Journey of Hope with Rodney Mathers. We're glad you could be with us today. The Journey of Hope is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues of men and women who have been released from incarceration. Have we got a great show for you today? On the program is Dr. Paul Fawtek. Paul has written a book that you've probably heard of. It's called Going Straight, An Ex-Convict Psychologist Tells Why and How. And Dr. Fawtek had lots of trouble as a youth, did some prison time, turned himself around to such a way that he was given a presidential pardon in 1992, eventually became a forensic psychologist. His story is fascinating, and we've got him right here today on The Journey of Hope. I just wanted to give you a heads up on what's coming up in the next couple of weeks right here on The Journey of Hope. Next week, we have a double whammy for you, two special guests. We have David Seth Chernoff, who's written a book about surviving cancer, not once, but twice in his life. And David's book is fascinating for us in that the parallels you can draw in the struggles that he's had are almost identical to what ex-offenders go through. You want to be sure and be here for that interview. Also on the show next week, we have Gerald Ballone. You may have seen Gerald on the 700 Club recently. Gerald served 37 years flat, and now that he's out, guess what? He's successful, and we're going to talk to him about how he got from there to here. And then the week after that, we're going to have the one and only Mr. Mark Anthony, the psychic attorney. We're going to have fun with Mark, but he's got a very serious side to him as well. You want to be sure and be with us for all of those interviews right here on The Journey of Hope.
Life can bring, I've always needed something, but I've got all I
Hey, and welcome back to the show. We have on the phone with us today our very special guest, Dr. Paul Fawtek. Dr. Fawtek is a forensic psychologist, and he's written one of the better books that I've seen. It's called An Ex-Convict Psychologist Tells Why and How. Paul had his problems as a youth. He went to prison and turned himself around in such a way that he received a presidential pardon in 1992. And Paul, I want to start with that. How did that all go down?
My record that I got my act together, and by that time I was already intending to make forensic psychology my specialty. Mm-hmm. And I guess I just, maybe as much as anything, I wanted to prove to myself that I'd really truly turned my life around, although logically I really knew I had. It had been a long, long, long time since I'd had any kind of mm-hmm. any kind of problems with the law. Mm-hmm. But I applied through the Department of Justice. There's a procedure that you can that a convicted felon can go through if his offenses were federal, and it takes several years mm-hmm. for that to go through, and you're subject to a investigation similar to what you undergo if you've applied for a security clearance, top secret security clearance, so they really look into your life, you have to not only have been staying out of trouble, but you actually have to be making something of a contribution to society.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my understanding that only about 1 out of 10 of those who apply actually get the pardon.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine the chances of getting one are slim. But, Paul, the reason I bring it up is it shows that, you know, because of the extensive background checking that they do and so forth, it shows that you really did figure out a way to put all the crap behind you and to move forward in a positive way in your life. Now, Paul, one of the things you talk about in your video is pro-social behavior versus anti-social behavior. We obviously want to have pro-social behaviors. Can you talk to us a little bit about what pro-social behavior is?
Well, in the simplest terms, pro-social behavior is that which society in general approves of, and that which is in, you know, to the benefit of society.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't necessarily mean only that which is legal versus illegal.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of things that are not necessarily illegal, but are certainly not pro-social. I have to say, truthfully, when I walked out the gates in 1959, I had $20 and a GED, and I knew that I had no intention of going back. I said, that's it. You know, that's I've seen the last of prison from the inside. I really did not know how much I needed to change about myself at that time. I would like to tell you that I was a model citizen, a model human being. Looking back later, I realized I was not. And I realized that for a long time after I quit engaging in criminal behavior, I still wasn't treating other people well.
Mm-hmm.
I still did things that were part of a criminal lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
I tended to make a lot of excuses for myself. I tended to make impulsive decisions. I tended to let my temper get away with me.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about both of those things in just a second. But you bring up, first you bring up a really excellent point. You bring this out in the video, and it's something that I've noticed in my personal life, in the friends that I have that have been incarcerated, and me too to some degree. Incarceration doesn't necessarily change somebody, does it?
Absolutely not. Incarceration in and of itself isn't going to rehabilitate the vast majority of offenders. Now, I will tell you frankly, and I'm speaking as a scientist as much as a forensic, as a former offender, and that is that offenders are not all stamped out of the same mold. There are a lot of different people with different kinds of problems. I will acknowledge that there are a few people who just had some of the wrong ideas and just needed what some people might say, a good whomp up the side of the head to wake them up.
Right.
And maybe a couple of years and, you know, behind bars would do it. I think they're a minority.
Mm-hmm.
I think usually by the time the courts have said, okay, you've had enough probation, you've had enough warning, you've had enough chances, you're going to the slammer, I think by then the person is so immersed in some form of criminal lifestyle that some kind of rehabilitation is going to be necessary.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say that when I was in prison that there was nothing. There were some things. I mean, I had some vocational training. I went through a Dale Carnegie course. There were things like that. However, there are negative effects of being in prison as well. A lot of the things that a person has to do in prison to survive are not what a good citizen is supposed to do on the outside.
You're absolutely right. And that kind of brings up a point here. You had mentioned, like, temper earlier. In order to survive in prison, you got to have a little bit of an edge to you. But when you come home, you've got to switch gears. How does someone go about erasing that kind of mentality from their thinking when they're released from incarceration?
Well, if they've had the right kind of preparation and they have a good post-release program to fall back on, I think it's easier for them to review what they're thinking and realize that they do have some options, that they don't always have to prove themselves in the way that a lot of offenders do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will tell you that in the prison population, there are guys who you look at them cross-eyed and they think they've got to nail you. And there are guys who will say, excuse me, have I done something to offend you? And they will talk about it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So not everyone there is stamped out of the same mold either.
Well, you bring up a really good point there, Paul. There's a difference between there's this skewed perception of what respect is in prison. And when you come home, it's much different. There's a difference between respect and fearing somebody. In prison, you want people to kind of fear you a little bit so they'll leave you the hell alone. And everybody has that mentality. Could you address a little bit about the difference between respect and fear?
Well, I think that your average... I'm sorry to invoke a stereotype here, but your average punk in a street gang thinks he wants to be respected, and he doesn't really, because he doesn't really, most of the time, know what respect means. He wants people to be afraid of him. If he bumps into you in the street, he doesn't want you to say, you just bumped into me. He wants you to be afraid to say that.
Mm-hmm.
If I respect a person, I'm not necessarily afraid to say, excuse me, man, but you're being very rude here. The person I fear, I might not necessarily want to say that. And
mm-hmm.
when I talk to offender groups, I tell them that. I explain that to them.
Mm-hmm.
Look, you put a knife to my throat and say, do you respect me, man? Look, I'm not stupid. I'm going to say, I respect you. I respect you all over the place. But the truth is, I don't respect you. I think you're a scumbag.
I feel exactly.
Martin Luther King and people like that, I fear rattlesnakes. I don't respect rattlesnakes. I'm very careful not to step on them, And there's a real difference. If you want respect, that's something you earn. It's not something you can demand. With your fists, or with a knife, or a gun.
And it kind of leads into this next question I had for you, Paul. That's about impulsive, and you had mentioned this earlier. Impulsive behaviors. I think that all of us that have had problems with the law have a problem with impulsiveness. And how does one go about identifying the impulsiveness and addressing it in their day-to-day life? How do you fix that?
Well, I will tell you, first of all, let me say, I have the good fortune to have been born reasonably intelligent. That's not something to brag about because that's genetics. It's not something that I earned. And I was, you know, kind of able to figure out a few things that maybe might come a little harder to some folks. And I was also very, very fortunate to make some friends after I left prison who were candid enough and liked me well enough as a person to tell me when I was being a jerk. And some of that got through to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if it were easier for us to listen to feedback, if we could, if you could turn every offender out of prison with just that, that they can listen to feedback from other people and not have to put up a wall of defense,
mm-hmm.
not
mm-hmm.
have to get their hackles up and become hostile, I think you'd cut recidivism drastically. Right,
so stop being so damn defensive and let what people are telling you to try to help you sink in and think about it a little bit. I agree with that. You also in your videos, you talk about accepting responsibility. What role does that play in changing the way that you think as you're released from prison?
Sorry, could you just repeat that?
Changing responsibility, Paul. What role does that play in your post-incarceration life, accepting your responsibility?
It dawned on me entirely too slowly that I was not getting very far for working as hard as I did it was always somebody else's fault, okay? I was a very reasonable person. Okay, I only did what quote anybody would do or should do. This is what I thought and what I said.
Mm-hmm.
But people around me weren't quitting jobs at the drop of a hat and getting fired as much as I was. And any employer that I had would tell you that I was a hard worker and that I did a good job. But then they would also add that he could be hard to get along with. Or you sure can't tell that guy anything. it took me a while to learn that. And I have to say it was very fortunate. I was very fortunate to at least gradually figure that out instead of being the one who says, oh, to hell with it. I can't make it. I may as well just go back to what I know best. Or, you know, just...
And the temptation was there to do that, obviously.
Right, right. I mean, I did intend to stay out. That was the one thing. And I... I was a slow learner.
Well, you do make the point in your videos that that when you first came home, you had not changed the way that you think. And I think that a lot of us fall into that trap. We cherish the freedom so much, and we look forward to that day, and then we walk out the door, and then what? You know, so, yeah.
Right.
Hey, listen, I also noticed that... you talk a little bit about family responsibility, Paul, and we may have some family members of offenders that are listening, of ex-offenders that are listening. What advice would you have for them in terms of what's okay to do for them and what's not okay to do for them?
There are a couple of rather, to my notion, there are a couple of rather clear do's and don'ts. Certainly, one of the clear don'ts is don't make excuses for bad behavior. Don't be the kind of family, the kind of relative, the kind of spouse, boyfriend or girlfriend, who always says, oh, he or she is trying so hard. And in other words, saying what the offender is so likely to say for him or herself, okay? I mean, it's okay to say, you know, hey, they're right. You know, you really do need to make some changes here.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. The other is, don't always bring up past offenses, past transgressions against the family or against society, and throw them at the offender, because the person doesn't need to get the idea that that it can't be lived down. Because the fact of the matter is that it can.
And you're proof of that.
Getting practical help is fine, but the person needs to understand that it is really in his or her hands that others can help.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're going to do is help. They're not going to do it for the offender.
What about
more examples of that in my book, but I think those are some of the most important ones to keep in mind. I do intend, if my health holds up, I'm 75 years old, and you know, none of us knows how much time we have left. I hope I have quite a bit left. There are a few things I want to do, and one of them is I would like to do a follow up to the book.
Excellent.
Some things that I would include in it now that didn't occur to me at the time, or things that I've learned
mm-hmm.
Since then.
Hey, listen,
I
Paul.
Think that it will help. I've gotten a lot of feedback from people who said they used it, and they read it regularly, or they read it while they were in prison. I've never, ever gotten a letter from someone saying, you know, I got this book, and it was just a waste of time. Never gotten one letter like that.
Well, I think the videos ought to be a must-see for everyone in pre-release, because they're absolutely excellent. Just a couple of more things real quick, Paul. I was wondering, what do you have to say about the role of spirituality in an ex-offender's life? Could you address that for us?
I think that it can be very useful. I certainly never discourage people from including a relationship with a church or congregation with their higher power.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to encourage people to believe that God is going to give them a free pass. When I worked for the circuit court and I interviewed defendants, a lot of them would talk about a lot of things or future plans other than, you know, just the case that they were facing. And I'd hear so many of them say, I know everything's going to be okay for me now because I found Jesus. Well, okay, that's fine, and I'm not ridiculing their faith by any means. But I believe that the majority of Jesus' disciples were persecuted for their faith. They didn't get free passes. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think that spirituality, whether it's whether you're Christian or Jewish or Muslim, or whatever that faith, I think the help comes from within. That you know that faith gives you the courage to face hardships and to face temptations, and hopefully to measure your conduct against an ideal. Is this someone who calls himself A, you fill in the blank, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Could reasonably be doing.
Well,
I think that's how it helps. And I do know that many religious congregations have reached, have lent a helping hand to people who were sincere in wanting to get their lives together. I also, unfortunately, I know of a few cases where you know, people who were not well motivated and had taken advantage of people who trusted them and wanted to help them, and I think that's tragic. And I would certainly urge, you know, anyone with a record who goes to a clergyman or a religious congregation and says, you know, please help me, don't hurt those people. They're the last that should be mistreated by anyone.
Well, that person hasn't changed, and they've missed the whole point of everything that we're trying to say today, if that's the case. Paul, your book is called Going Straight, An Ex-Convict Psychologist Tells Why and How. You've also got the videos on your website. And by the way, the videos are free for download. There's 4 pieces to them. They are absolutely fantastic. I highly recommend Paul's book. Dr. Fatek, thank you so much for being here today. Very informative, and I appreciate your appearance on the show, sir.
Well, thank you so much for asking me.
We'll be right back after this. My name is Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope.
Hey everybody, I just want to remind you how you can get in touch with me. We love hearing from you. You can catch me on the comment section of the Podbean page, or you can email me directly at mathersrodney@yahoo.com. That's mathersrodney@yahoo.com. Don't want to know your last name. Don't want to know why you went to prison. I just want to know how you're doing, okay? Drop me a line. That's all we have time for today. I want to thank you for joining us. It's a joy to share with you. Hey, you want to be sure and check out Dr. Fatek's book. I got the links up there for you, and he's got some free videos for you to download, too. You want to check those out. And I want to remind you something. If God is for you, who can be against you? We'll see you next time right here on Journey of Hope.